late. A little late, guys. The Sharp Tongue Podcast is in your ear. A little late. A day late and a dollar short. Okay? Listen, we're going to get it together. I am here in sunny San Diego, California. I'm in my hotel room. I've got Carlin right here with his smelly pit bull face right on my lap. And Chaplin's in the corner chewing on a bone. And we're just happy. We're happy. We're happy to be here for you guys. I'm in San Diego at the American Comedy Company tonight, which is Friday, and tomorrow, Saturday. So if you hear this and you're in the area or know somebody in the area, come on out. American Comedy Company in San Diego this weekend, February 18th, 19th, and 20th. Okay? All right, y'all? Let's do this. Now, my intro is going to be a little bit shorter because my interview this week is about 2 hours and 20 minutes long, but it's so dope. And the reason why it's long is because who I interviewed with, we just couldn't stop talking. We had so much shit to talk about, and it was the first time for us interviewing each other, and we actually did another swap cast, which I'm going to be doing a couple of when other people have... Oh, look at that. My sister just texted me. When other people have podcasts, they will tape it together and just share it on each other's network. Two birds, one stone. Doug Stanhope kind of kicked it off. He calls it the swap cast. So I'm adhering to his advice. Okay? If you haven't heard of Doug Stanhope, check him out. And we'll get into what interview I did this week soon. First, San Diego this week. I'm going to do my show updates, my tour updates. I had to cancel Indianapolis at the Crackers Comedy Club in Broad Ripple. I'm doing a pilot. I'm working on a TV show, so I had to move that weekend so that I could facilitate the schedule for the taping. I apologize for anybody who bought tickets. I will be back there at some point soon this year, so I'm sure that we can arrange so you can come and use those tickets, and they will be perfectly fine to use. Okay, y'all? That's Indianapolis, the last weekend of February, the 25th, 26th, 27th, and 28th. I had to move. So hang on tight to those tickets. Hang on tight. Hang on to your tights. Okay. March 12th, if you're in front of your television, I will be on OWN Network on a new show called It's Not You, It's Men with Tyrese and Rev Run. And I'm on there with Lonnie Love, and we talk about all sorts of things that have to do with relationships and being a woman and how to get your respect and how to respect a man. So check it out. It's called It's Not You, It's Men on the OWN Network, March 12th. Holler at your girl. I'm going to be so cute with full hair and makeup. You probably won't recognize me because I'll be all done up like a hooker trying to catch that D. Okay, other shows. Tampa Improv, March 11th, 12th, and 13th. The Tampa Improv, March 11th, 12th, and 13th. Zany's Nashville, March 18th, 19th, and 20th. Cincinnati Funny Bone, April 8th, 9th, and 10th. Tampa Improv will be with one of my comedy besties and my brother from another mother, Marty Caproni. That's the 11th, 12th, and 13th. Zany's Nashville will be with Justin Martindale. March 18th, 19th, and 20th. In Cincinnati Funny Bone, I don't know who my opener is going to be yet, but that's April 8th, 9th, and 10th. Come see your girl. And this podcast is brought to you live and in charge because of sponsorship now. I appreciate it. We're going to be having a couple different sponsors coming in, but right now I've been working with Wantable. You guys got to check Wantable out. It's a new personalized monthly fitness apparel subscription. That's a mouthful. Okay, basically you get your hot, cute workout clothes in a subscription form. Wantable's really dope. They got the latest trends. They personalize it just for you. They deliver it to your doorstep each month. If you want to look cute out in these streets because the struggle is real, and if you got a booty and you want to show it off, you know, get on Wantable. You can pick out these clothes. These clothes, that's not even a word, bitch. Read a dictionary. Choose from our fitness edit services. That's what they have, these cute little thing where you sign in, you take a quick style quiz, and then you can discover their handpicked items that they choose perfectly for you. You can keep what you love, return what you don't. Returns are free, and you can cancel and skip anytime. Check out Wantable, okay? It's totally personalized. They have all these different styles that aren't designer brands, so they have their own little boutique brand. So it's not going to be like, you know, you're walking in the street and 10 other girls are going to have what you have on. It's totally unique, high-end quality. You know, it's pretty dope. If you just like to wear yoga pants every goddamn day at the grocery store, sign up. Wantable. Go take the Wantable quiz. Wantable.com/sharp to get started with the fitness quiz. And then you can start getting clothes delivered to your doorstep because we love clothes. That's one thing I love. I have too much of. But you know what? I'm going to keep it coming because I'm living my life. I'm living my life like it's golden. Okay, y'all? God damn it. Let's talk about the Sharp Tongue Podcast giveaway winners. Hello. I had you people do some crazy Jesse memes a couple weeks ago where you had the freedom to take my face and make a meme out of it on the interweb. And then I asked you guys to tell me some crazy dating stories this week for a giveaway. And boy, did you tell me some insane dating stories. I picked a couple as my favorite. And I'm going to read it to you here. So this one is from Tori Frum, and it says, so basically my fucked up date is actually my first sexual experience with someone. I was 15 at the time. Whoa, a little young and super into this girl who was a little older than me. Okay, I take it back, sir. And I was also basically best friends with. Oh, wait, maybe this is a chick. She was definitely straight, but hey, I'm androgynous and cute as fuck, so she kind of had feelings for me, too. We hung out pretty much every day, and we've been kissing a lot, but never took it any further than that until this day. We started out the date by going to see one of the Twilight movies. Yeah, wow, romantic. After the movie was over, she drove us to my house, and we went into my basement where we usually hung out. We were just making out, and I got the guts to try to take things further. Go ahead. She was all for it, and I was super stoked and started fingering her. Oh, God, I hate that word. Fingering. There's no other alternative, though. And I thought, wow, this is great. But this is where it gets awkward. She stopped me and said, you know, this feels great and all. I really like you, but just know I'm going to eventually want a dick, so I think we should just stop. Dreams crushed. Oh, shit. That's when I learned never fall for a straight girl, because even if you strap on, you'll never have a real dick. And that's what she wants. Sincerely, Tori Frum. Man, I was like, Tori could be a man or a girl, but that's amazing. At least she was honest, though. At least she came out and told you, like, you know, right before you got in too deep, literally. I mean, you were in kind of deep already, Tori, but she told you right then, and you were 15. Wow, that's amazing. I give this girl props for being honest to you. She could have just, you know, said some whatever shit just to string you along. Go ahead with your Twilight movie. That's Tori Frum. So you're one of my winners. Pick a date that you want to go to see me live, and we'll figure that out. I'll have my assistant Liz Perez talk to you, and we'll get it all set up. Now, the next winner said I can't use the name. And after I read this story, I realized, okay, maybe it's better off that I didn't. But I contacted him. He knows that he's a winner, so I'm going to read his story. He said, please don't use my name if I win. Well, you won, sir. Here's his story, his awkward dating story. I met this young woman online. We talked for a few weeks and exchanged numbers, did the phone sex thing, and set up a date for her to come to my place to watch movies and whatever, Netflix and chill. Well, she shows up, and I don't know if she was pregnant or not, but she had that build. She was wearing flip-flops, and they must have been old because, you know, that dirty feet smell? Yeah, it was like that. Damn! So I ordered Chinese food for us, and we watched one of the Saw movies. And then she says, what do you want to do now? And I'm like, watch another movie? So we start to watch another movie. And at some point, she says she got a text that her friend needed her. Oh, okay. And she had to go, which was fine by me. She left and we never spoke again. Yeah, oh, she needed to go? Yeah, she needed to go deliver a baby and get a pedicure. Jesus, that's terrifying, sir. You deserve so much more than free tickets to come see me live, but I'll give you a hug when I meet you, okay? You know who you are. Those are my favorite ones. I appreciate you guys participating in the giveaway. I want to, you know, keep giving back to you guys as much as I can because I appreciate you listening. What are we going to do this week? I want to do another giveaway. I like the memes thing, man. I want to do one with my dogs. Because I love my dogs so much, and I think animal shit is funny. I like to see those stupid little videos and stuff. But I want to find pictures of my dogs online and do some memes. You can even use Fozzie, and Fozzie's dead. So you guys can get real dark with it, okay? Just don't be mean, man. Don't be mean. But I'm giving you freedom to use a Fozzie photo if you want. Or you can pick Chaplin, or you can pick Carlin. Make a funny meme out of my dogs, and you got to post them on the internet. You have to at me, at Jessie Mae Peluso, and hashtag Jessie Meme. And I'll pick the winners, and I'll announce them next week on the podcast. And if you don't feel comfortable sending to it online, you can email it at sharptonguepodcast@gmail.com. Yay, yay. I'm very excited this week to be airing my Swapcast episode that I did with... this guy is insane. He's one of the funniest people on and off stage. It's one thing about... comedians. He's a comedian. Let me preface that. Sometimes they can be interesting people off stage. You know, the whole persona on stage and off can be a total dichotomy. So he's just a blast. And I went to his house to talk with him, and he was asleep. I show up. Him and I set the time. I show up at 10 a.m. His lovely wife answered the door, and this motherfucker's passed out in bed. So his wife and I had coffee and just chatted in the kitchen. And I got a little taste of what the other side is like, because he has a wife and two adorable daughters and a whole house and a dog. And he has a man cave and chickens. He's a delight. We talked for a couple hours about all sorts of stuff, goofy shit, right on down to the serious stuff. I hope you guys enjoy this interview with the machine, Bert Kreischer. More like Bert Crusher, am I right? From the news.
Go ahead, talk.
Check, hello.
Yes, perfect.
Sounds good.
They're hilarious. They're really funny guys. All those guys at the network are like Vanilla Ice is a DIY.
Why is Vanilla Ice there?
He's got a show. He made his millions on Ice Ice Baby, and then started.
Let me make sure my
phone.
Yeah, I'm making sure mine is off.
He started to make money. He started flipping houses.
Vanilla Ice?
Yeah.
And come
so,
on.
Yeah, dead
I feel
serious.
Like I'm high right now.
Nope. And so it was actually my friends. The guys who I work with now, Ross Babbitt, Andy Singer, who's gone from travel, Dale, they discovered Vanilla Ice, and they were at DIY at the time. They're now all at travel.
Vanilla Ice, that blows my mind.
He's the best. He's the best.
Is he really?
I could
Ron
call him
Van
right
Winkle?
Now. I could call him right now, and he would, and I'd be like, hey, my friend is doing stand-up in West Palm, comes here. And he'd be like, oh, fuck yeah.
So you have to do that for me.
Of course I will. Of course I will. He is the sweetest guy in the world. Him.
That is bizarre.
Bobby Flay is like the nicest guy in the world.
Really?
Yeah, Bobby Flay and I were in Dallas. You do these, they're called upfronts.
Right.
You know what upfronts are.
Yeah.
We do them differently at Scripps. We do them just by ourselves with food, travel, DIY, cooking, all the networks, Great American Country, and we bring the advertisers. We go to the advertisers in like Atlanta, Minneapolis, Dallas, New York, L.A., and I think that might, or maybe a couple more places,
yeah.
Chicago. We go, and the talent goes.
Is it open to the public, or is it just industry in those places that come out?
And no, it's just the industry in those places.
So it's like a smaller upfront.
A more intimate upfront, and we just showed
more intimate upfront,
yeah. And it's so much fun.
We'll put
so
up like, some shelves.
So like we did one in Dallas, and Bobby Flay was there. You do the upfront, you go over, and I'm like, Bobby, I'm just a huge fan. And I was like, I'd seen him in the gym, and I so badly, and I knew that he had known who I was, because you watch enough of these upfronts, you just know the talent,
right?
That
you start to see the faces.
It is a family affair kind of thing,
yeah.
And so I so badly wanted to go up to him at the gym and put my arms around him and go, hey, you. And just see what he said. But
I feel like he would have been fine with it.
He said you should have done that.
That would have been so... Like, imagine that's how you met.
Yeah. And he said you should have done that. And I was like, I was going to, but then I thought if it went wrong, it could have gone really wrong. And by the way, this is the day that guy came out of the closet. The basketball player came out of the closet.
Oh, what was...
Jason...
Yes.
Something.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so anyway... DIY built this man cave.
It's amazing.
They came in. So you said it's
so they built it from the ground up?
This
or was this an existing?
This is a woodworking shop,
right,
attached to our garage. and they came in. They opened that was a door behind you. They opened this area up, put all the pavers in.
Are those your cowboy boots in the corner?
Those are my legit cowboy boots.
Those look like you own a farm cowboy boots.
Those I ran Buffalo through Texas, and I wore those boots. You wore them every day.
When the fuck did you run Buffalo through? That sounds like a midlife crisis trip for a man.
I've gone. You know, so funny. I wish I could figure out a way to talk about this on stage. I've done everything that. That you could ever imagine doing. Scuba diving, bungee jumping, skydiving.
Like all like the fun kind of extreme things.
Riding, like learning. I can ride a horse extremely well now because of this. I've run on horseback like full.
Me too.
Sprint is
it's one of my most favorite things ever.
I have a hard time describing it.
I realized I used to ride a lot. I'm from Syracuse. I used to ride a lot. Yeah. And I realized at one time when I was in the Dominican Republic and I was there on vacation and they ride the horses. They bring them out early in the morning and they do like those beachfront rides. And so the evening is like 6 o'clock and this young Dominican boy is on a horse trailing two. So he has three horses that he's in control of. And I'm sitting on the beach and I'm watching him come close to me and I can speak fairly enough Spanish to have a conversation. And so I asked him if I could help him bring the horses back. And he said, yeah. So I got on the horse. I told him I could ride. I was topless. I had no shirt on because we'd been laying out on the beach all day long.
No bikini?
I had bottoms, but they were thong bottoms. So I'm talking to this like 13-year-old Dominican boy, tits out, asking him in Spanish if I can ride the horse. He lets me get on, and the barn is about over a mile down the beach. Sun setting, and I just full, like, just, like, pedal to the metal down the beach. And it feels like, I can't even equate it to drugs, but I've never felt a feeling like this in my life. When you're on an animal, and you just sort of, especially a horse, because, you know, you ride, so you know some horses you don't connect with.
Right.
And it's a scary situation.
That is the scariest thing about them is I've been kicked off horses.
And you can die. You can become paralyzed. You can become severely injured.
I was in Costa Rica and what I was doing wrong, and this is, I just had no lessons as I didn't have, is as the horse would take off, I'd grab on with my feet, which means go faster.
Yeah.
And or get me the fuck off you.
Right.
And the horse was freaking out.
Yeah, it's like a different, it's so slight, the slightest things. It's like dogs. It's just energy that if you shift. Yeah.
It's a lot like stand up. There's a moment. It's like
a tipping point. Like you have a couple seconds to make a decision, or it's going to go another way.
And then the thing that blows me away about running on horseback or having a horse run. I guess it's run or gallop. It's not gallop. It's
a gait.
It's not canter.
It's not canter. What's the fastest one?
I don't know. But whatever that is,
whatever that fourth one is,
you go from like a gallop to a canter, and it actually is uncomfortable because you've got to like pace out time the horse, and then all of a sudden when the horse starts running, it's the most pure,
it feels like
beautiful. It's
open,
perfect.
Up. It is.
It's like I would go, why would you ever do anything but this on a horse? I would just run my horse everywhere.
Me too.
And it sucked because we got out.
This is in Costa Rica?
No, this was in Texas.
Okay.
We get out, we run Buffalo, which is a really unpredictable animal.
So why were you running Buffalo first?
Oh, it's for my TV show.
Okay, yeah, so this is that's awesome though. Okay, so running Buffalo I would imagine would be very difficult. Cuz I feel like cows are a little less feral.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Buffalo we had to get them. They're up on a mountaintop. We had to take them down through a pass. In between two rivers, which was like a bridge, or in between two lakes, and then around into a pen, and then we had to get them in the corral.
Which is, it's basically just narrow, it's like salmon up a river, and everything has to get narrow into a little space, right?
And it's a subtle conversation you're having with them of like just getting up on them. And your horse can never be sideways. Your horse always has to be, because if your horse is sideways, then the buffalo will charge you and they'll flip you.
So you mean like you can't be perpendicular to their bodies with your horse?
You have to be face to face with them. And so you have to be able to ride your horse sideways, like move your horse sideways.
Right.
You have to be able to spin your horse in a circle real quick.
What was the preparation for this? It sounds like a lifelong thing you need to learn how to do.
4 days hardcore horse training from like 8 in the morning until 11.
And had you been able, like, your horseback riding skills up to that point, did you feel comfortable enough just getting on the horse being like, cool?
No. It's so funny. The last time I'd gotten on a horse was in Costa Rica.
And how many years prior before that?
Four months before that, I'd gotten kicked off a horse.
You got kicked off. The last time you were on the horse, you got kicked off.
Yeah, in Costa Rica. And I was, it was like.
Did you get hurt?
No, but I got really scared and I got really angry and I really freaked out and I'd been bit by a bat and that's, they said that.
What?
Yeah.
I feel like.
I wish I could find a way to talk about this on stage.
You have to, because it's like something Charlie Sheen says, that he got bit by a bat.
I got bit by a bat.
It's an alliteration.
Two nights before, Stanhope told me, just drink it away. It happens all the time. And then I'm like.
He said that when you got bit by the bat?
Yeah, he was like, my remedy, I forget the name of the beers. He's like, mass cerveza.
How did you get bit by a bat?
I was.
Is this on the show, for the show too?
No. I think I'll speak candidly about this show, only because my new show coming out, Birth Conqueror, is not this at all.
Right.
Trip Flip was the name of the show. It is a great show. It's just a very different. It's a very different purpose to that show.
Right.
It's not about me having the time of my life. It's about two travelers having the time of life. We're thinking about changing it. I shouldn't talk about it really, but there's a thinking about doing it again, doing it differently. We've been toying with it,
reworking it,
retooling it, because it's a successful show.
It sounds like a great idea,
but. What we're missing is this conversation that I'm having with you about they don't show me getting kicked off the horse because it's not about me.
You got to show those things.
Yeah, and they don't show me getting bit by a bat and having panic attacks because it's not about me.
That needs to be the main, like, I need to see that. Like, I need to see you getting, you had a panic attack? A bat panic attack?
I had a really bad panic attack scuba diving in Fiji.
Wait, hold on. I need a little bit of info on the bat bite.
We go whitewater rafting, and
we're in the
jungle in Costa Rica, and we get out. You pull out, and you're in the fucking jungle.
Yeah, and Costa Rica's real. Like, it's a jungle.
It is.
It's like the Amazon.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So I get out. I start walking up a trail to go to find our Jeep or whatever truck we have, and I brush up against a bush, and I feel something hit. I feel like a prick on my legs. And I'm like, and I just, it's so clean. It's like almost like a hypodermic needle. Like, I went, oh, that's odd. And I didn't think anything of it. And I'm sitting at dinner that night.
Crying. I'm laughing so hard.
I'm sitting at dinner that night and I go, hey, what's that on my leg? It's like this blood. And I'm like, and I say to the, this is where it gets horrible.
God, that would have been so terrifying.
I go, that's odd. And then the waitress goes, oh, you've been bit by a bat.
What?
And I went, I have? And she goes, oh, yeah, it's a bat bite. So this is the tricky part, is my wife still doesn't believe I've been bit by a bat because I never went to a doctor. I just had a waitress just decide that I got bit by a bat. A waitress and Doug Stanhope. I texted Doug a picture and Doug goes, oh, it's a bat bite. And now I'm running. You have like 4 days,
oh God,
3 days where you can get rabies shots.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
And if you don't get them within that 4 days, then.
You have rabies.
If you get rabies, you die. It's 100% fatality. So I start panicking, going, God, I need a doctor. But everyone's in Costa Rica is like, Pura vida. It's okay, man.
It's Pura vida. It's life.
Yeah, it's life. And so I never got tested. I talked to a doctor on the phone. He goes, we don't have rabies. You're fine. And so I never got tested.
You went on the grace of people's words that you were fine.
Doug Stanhope, a waitress, and some stoner doctor who was like, it's sundown with my family. You're fine. And so but it's so funny, as I would go to get the next round of trips we did. We were all international, like Africa. There were really sketchy places we were going. We went to the jungles of Vietnam. So we had to get a lot of shots and stuff. And the woman, when I got my shots, said, do you want to get a rabies shot? And I passed and go, I've already been bit by a bat. She went, you've been bit by a fucking bat? And she goes, did you get the rabies shots? I said, no. And she goes, you know that's fatal, right? And I was like, oh, fuck, here we go again.
But imagine like how strong your immune system is after being bit by a bat.
Oh, yeah. I always say that, like, because in December 1st, I stopped drinking for like maybe like a week. Just like I didn't drink for a week. And I lost 20 pounds.
In 1 week?
Yeah.
Did you think the rabies kicked in then?
I think my body goes, yeah. Okay, we get to sleep.
Yeah.
We get to hold on, liver.
It settles in. It's like, oh, okay. Let's just.
So wait, when did you move to New York City first?
I moved to Boston first. In Syracuse, that's where I grew up, and then I left when I was 18, moved to Boston, did like improv for like 3 years. Have you ever done improv?
In my dreams.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's painful to watch. Bad improv is bad.
Yeah.
And then I started doing stand-up in Boston, then I moved to New York.
Really?
And I drank heavily, and then I just sort of like did drinking more than stand-up, and then eventually the shift happened.
Did you stop drinking altogether?
Not altogether, because I like alcohol.
I love it.
I enjoy it. I've found a balance with it for the most part. You know, there's a couple of those nights where you wake up and you're like, okay, my underwear's on my head. I have one sneaker on and I don't know how I got home last night.
Yeah.
And you have to retrace.
It's so funny. There was a hashtag Guess All Women. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I loved it because I never understood. I maybe this is not exactly what those people that created the hashtag want. But like, I always thought men and women were equal in like the sense that like you say underwear on my head, one shoe on, and I go, oh, I've had those nights. But that's got to be scary as a woman to have those nights.
Yeah, it's scary because it could mean pregnancy.
Yeah. Like it could mean my life's over. Yeah. My life changes drastically. Yeah. Goodbye, stand-up comedy.
Yeah, it could mean pregnancy and a sore butthole for a long time. Which one, when the butthole heals, then you give birth and then your butthole hurts again.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Of giving birth.
I've seen that. They gave my wife an episiotomy and I went, whoa.
God.
I saw that with my eyes.
But, I'm glad it was your eyes and not like your dick hole.
I was like, holy to this day,
now that you've seen it, do you remember it fondly and is it magnificent or is it terrifying or is it both? Because I've never seen that. I mean, I've seen videos, but to be in the room.
It was terrifying.
Did you feel like concerned for your wife?
I mean, you know, what's so funny is this sounds so cheap, but like I'm such a comedian. And at the time I was so like, I always say I've been talking to Rogan and Bill about this.
Yeah.
But when you get out of stand up and start working on television and doing something else that isn't stand-up, your brain shifts because the stand-up's brain is so focused on material.
Every moment of the day.
I'm thinking about material. I'm literally thinking about material every fucking moment.
Yep.
But at that moment, I was so focused on stand-up. It's all I was doing. And it was like, it was my life was... Driving out to Brea on a Tuesday night, driving out to Irvine on a Thursday night, going on the road and featuring and doing sets at the Hollywood Improv if I could.
Yep.
That I think that I don't, and I wasn't that good. I mean, I was a good stand-up, but I was still young.
Right, figuring it out.
I was still figuring it out. I was maybe been doing it like 6 years.
So you're just starting to like find your groove a little.
I found my voice very quickly.
Oh, good. That's dope.
But I didn't understand my ability of writing yet. And so I got to be honest with you. I kind of hacky like saw it. I saw it and I was like, oh, I'm not going to be able to fuck that later. And then the joke, I said, are we putting that back together? The only part that is funny of this whole rant that I did, it was a big story about giving birth, which everyone has. I was like, are we going to put that back together? And he was like, of course. There's a Jamaican doctor. He's like, of course I am, boy. I go, well, do you want to take a look at my junk? Or are we just going to ballpark this on a handshake? It's the only part that is interesting of that whole chunk.
The verbiage is perfect.
But it's so funny is that when you're a bad comedian, you see life hacky.
You do. You do because it's inexperience. It's the combination of wanting to make something funny but not yet knowing how. And so you resort to that. It's almost like the next, you know, it's just like what the first thing is on your mind. Do you do this? I was thinking about this last night because I was writing some jokes and I had to like look at material and write jokes. You know, you ever do those shows where like, here's some stuff. Whatever first comes to my mind, I don't trust it. Is that crazy? Do you know what I mean though?
A lot of times, because I write on stage, a lot of times.
Me too.
A lot of times, whatever. I think I've trained myself to skip the first thing, but a lot of times the first thing I say on stage that works, I'm so lazy these days that I go, all right, that joke's done.
Yeah, done.
And I'm like, oh, there we go. And And sometimes
got that one in the bag.
Yeah, what am I going to fucking beat myself up to find something better? It works. They laughed.
It's fine.
I get some very lazy about that.
But I think that's different on stage because I also like you tag on stage, especially when you're in that groove. I think that's a different part of your brain that is working. I think when it's like comes like sitting down and like actually having to access that part of your brain and, you know, like look at something like here's the material. What's funny? Whatever pops up, I'm like, that's not going to be good enough because I feel like it's going to be hacky.
I do like that.
Everyone thinks
I do. I do a few different styles of writing these days. I'm really obsessed with my long form stories. So I love doing Ari's storytelling show.
Yeah.
But I'm obsessed in a way that like I had probably a very pivotal breakfast or lunch with Ari one day where we started dissecting what made great stories. I'll say this, and by the way, because I love this guy and he knows I'd never talk shit about him.
Ari?
No. I definitely talk shit about Ari.
Yeah, we should totally do a whole section of this podcast.
But like Sebastian Maniscalco is so fucking talented.
God, he's so funny.
And he told this great story in Montreal, but the story didn't have like an end. So in a weird way, it was like Sebastian is so amazing at owning subtlety. Mm-hmm. And creating humor out of nothing. He could just say a word, and the way he says it is funny.
Yeah.
And he had such a great story, but it didn't have an ending. And
it was anticlimactic.
All the big laughs were in the middle, and then he just said, and then that's my story. And it wasn't that
so
long of a story.
Out.
It fizzled out. And Ari and I went, but it still worked. And everyone was like, everyone, including Ari and I, were like, that was a great story, but it isn't the one you talked about at the end of the night. I told a story that wasn't that great, but had a great ending. And Ari was like, I don't know if I noticed it until like last night, but like you need great endings to stories. So then I started thinking the best stories I've ever been told in life. Honestly, one of the best stories ever is Ron White's Tater Salad. It is. Have you ever heard it?
I have heard bits. I don't know it completely.
Oh,
but
it's the greatest story.
I know of it because of, you know, comedians.
It's
and
the greatest story probably ever because of the way he tells it. And he uses a mechanism where he goes, now, I told you that story to tell you this story.
Right.
Like, I love that. And it's beautiful because the end of that story serves a purpose in the end of the other story that's unrelated.
That's interesting.
And so I started going, okay.
That's mathematical.
Then I started thinking, what are some really great stories in movies? But two of my favorite.
That's what I was just gonna say. Like that's how movies are.
Two of my favorite movies ever are Usual Suspects and Sixth Sense.
Oh damn!
So like I love those movies.
Those are so different too.
Because you get like an end where you go, where you start going, and then I'm figuring it out.
And
all
it,
these
the
fucking
end makes you rewind. That's how when an ending is good, it makes you go, oh my God, and then this. Oh my God, and then this.
Yeah.
It just makes you go back in time.
So
and it
I,
ties everything in.
So I told a story that is like that with, I wanted to tell a story that was reminiscent of The Sixth Sense or what you call of or Usual Suspects to on Ari's storytelling show. So I kind of like looked at it. So that's where my head is with writing is that I don't really get caught up in the minutia of the jokes in between for a story. I get caught up in, how am I going to arc this story so that you go, like the machine story. I don't know if you've ever heard me, my machine story.
No, I haven't.
I'm going to speak out of myself, but like it's your
famous story.
It's my famous story.
Yeah.
It's probably the story I'm most known for.
Yep.
And it's a great story. Now it's a great story in that it's a cool story that it's true and that it's unbelievable.
Right.
And that you're like, whoa, you got involved with the mafia? Like, how the fuck? But the reason everyone likes it, the reason people connect with it is because it's got an ending. And so I was like, shit, I have other stories that don't have endings. So the machine story in the center is just, the only reason I use jokes is to so that I can tell you the story.
Right.
So then I started going like, I was literally sitting up there and I'm like, I got four stories that I really want to work on. I'm going to start doing sets in the city and I'm going to start just telling these stories. I'm going to go up and I have no other purpose
it's
than to tell
so
this story.
Hard. It's so hard.
Oh, I was at...
Just not knowing where you're going to land and like trying... Like you're painting it on stage. That's so difficult.
It's not... So this is where my head is with writing. It's not about... By the way, I wish I could write shorter form jokes. I wish I had that brain. I wish I could be like Dimitri Martin and just hammer them out. Oh, God. I wish I could sit. People go, you don't sit and write? I do. But when I do, it's like, the only reason I write is to try to find themes that I dig.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, I don't like the short little pops. I have like longer. I like to get involved and invested in something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what are you working on right now?
I'm working on like tightening everything up and like the same thing you're talking about, like actually trying to make each joke a story and have it have an ending and have it like be its own little cinematic thing.
Yeah.
So that it can exist in itself and you know also be able to obviously go and segue into other things, but it's a skill, like story writing, using that sort of mindset to put into your jokes. That's a difficult thing to do.
Well, I'm never gonna have the ability to rant. Like we were sitting next to each other watching Joe,
right?
And at the store the other night, both of us were so impressed at his ability to rant,
yep,
free form, stream of conscious about subjects. Like I'm never gonna really like. And we talked about this too. It's a slippery slope these days. It's so volatile to take a subject that's going on in society and just kind of stand your ground and go, this is what I believe about that.
Yeah.
Bill does it, Joe does it, and I respect guys that do it. But that's not totally me. Like I don't really I don't vote. Like I don't give a fuck about voting.
I don't either.
I'm like, I was talking to a friend yesterday about paying taxes. I pay all my taxes.
Yep.
I don't really give a shit. I understand. I don't cheat.
Right.
Like, but I talk about like my family and I like to kind of, like I love when you get a story that just is so, that's like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
6 minutes and it just destroys from beginning to end.
Yes.
And you're like, whoa, okay. That people don't even know they heard a story.
They don't even, and that's the thing. Like they don't know they've heard a story because it's almost like a grocery store. There's all these lanes of different things existing in it, but everything under the ceiling of the grocery store, you go there for that. Like it's just one neat package, but it's hidden. You know, all these like little things are hidden inside.
Yeah.
It's like it's a way to tell a bunch of different jokes, if you want to call them jokes. I feel like that you're selling it short when you say jokes because it's a story. So that's like the skill of storytelling, like being able to sort of drag it along and sprinkle it with these things that sort of add color to it.
Yeah. It's hard. It's also hard to do that and, like we were saying, get passed at a club that you've never worked at.
Because it goes back to the Dimitri Martin thing. You've got to have these like... It's a weird thing because comedy's so vast. It's a universe in of itself, but a lot of the people who are in the industry and comedians even, they get stuck in their lanes. This is comedy. This is comedy.
Yeah.
This is comedy.
Yeah.
You have to have your joke, your setup punch. You have to be irreverent. You have to be dark. You have to be clean. You have to be dirty. And the reality is you just have to speak your truth.
Yeah. You just got to, it's like, there was I forget the comic, but there was a comic I watched. I was like, God, you're so good. And he was like, so blown away. He was like, really? I said, no, you don't know why you're good. And you'll fuck it up before you get good.
Yeah.
But like right now, you're just saying things that happen to you that are real. And that is why people are laughing.
Yep. Because they know that it's personal.
It's personal.
Yeah.
And then there's this time where people go, I did it too. Like I was like, when I first started my first few times, I was like, I was very me. I was a frat boy that came out of college and I didn't know anything else.
You were a frat boy?
Oh, heart. Are you kidding?
I can't look at your cowboy boots and see you as a frat boy.
Oh my God.
That's amazing.
I was the number one party animal in the country by Rolling Stone magazine.
The party animal thing I get, but frat boy, that's a left field. Interesting.
I have a need to fit in.
We're comedians. I feel like all of us do in some way, shape, or form.
My self-esteem is in the shitter. It consistently
There's
is.
A title for your next DVD.
My self-esteem is in the shitter. Doug Benson said my next album should be called White Noise.
That's good.
It's a good one, right?
That's great.
He's really good at coming up with titles.
Oh, that's a good title.
How did you meet Doug?
Doug and I did, we did New Year's Eve together 2 years ago at the Masonic. Yeah. You were
we
with
all
me.
Did it, yeah.
That's how I met you.
Yeah, me, you,
Was it two
Moshe?
Years ago or 3 years ago? 3 years ago.
No, was it? It wasn't this last one. It wasn't the one before that. It was the one before that, I think.
It was you, Hannibal, myself, Moshe.
Hannibal was there?
Yep. Hannibal was there. what's his name? White guy, tall white guy with a weird looking mouth. He had his own show. Pete Holmes. He's such a weird mouth.
Pete Holmes was there?
Yeah, he's got like a mouth looks like wax melting.
Oh, that Pete. That was when Pete was drinking.
Yes, he was drinking.
Because I went down and I was like, I was so blown away that I went down before the show and he was having a beer before the show.
Yeah, so like, is he sober now?
No, you know, he's like one of those other, he's like, there's a bunch of guys that are like that. Like, by the way, I don't know. I shouldn't speak for Pete at all.
Allegedly. Say allegedly.
But he's like one of those guys. He's a big drinker, but then he goes on big periods where he doesn't drink. And then he's like, you know what? I'm going to start drinking for the next couple months. And then he goes like, I want to say 8 months. I could be totally wrong.
Without drinking?
Yeah, but he was like a big boozer. TJ was a big boozer.
Yeah.
Like, and I only say that because I remember Ari saying all the Chicago guys are big boozers.
Yeah, I wish everyone in Chicago is a big boozer.
I wish I had come out of a scene. Like, well, I guess I came out of New York, but like they all came out of Chicago and came here.
Yeah.
Like him, Hannibal. I want to say Aziz. I'm sorry, but I'm sure it's not. No. Not Aziz. No. I'm sorry. Now I'm racist. Kumail.
Kumail. Yeah,
Kumail. Yeah. But they were all came out of Chicago and like all knew each other.
It's environmental. Like if you grow up, I grew up in Syracuse. Everyone's boozers in Syracuse. It's cold. It's gray. You know, you're.
Isn't Owen Benjamin out of Syracuse?
Oh, he's from Oswego, which is pretty much Syracuse. Yeah. Yeah.
Owen's one of my favorite human beings.
He is so dark. I'm attracted to like that dark comedy, and yeah. I love the fact that he doesn't give a fuck. He'll bring his piano, his he keyboard really on stage. He doesn't give a fuck.
He really does. He really doesn't give a fuck. Genuinely,
he doesn't, and he's super intelligent.
I think people, write it off as like he's just a good looking frat
arrogant
boy.
Yeah, they don't realize like no, he actually can break things apart and has an interesting point of view.
I love him. He's one of the people. Him and Nick Thune, and I don't like people were didn't like him and Nick Thune because they felt like they had it too easy when they came out here because Nick was gorgeous, and he's really talented, and he played the guitar and it was just like
great head of hair. That hair got him his career. Let's be honest.
The hair, the beard, the style.
Blue eyes.
He was the first person I ever saw with skinny jeans. I was like, what the fuck? Like, he had this mod rocker.
He did. He very mod.
Yeah.
And like, he could have rolled with Andy Warhol.
I was a little older than them, and I was already headlining when they showed up.
Yeah.
And I'd already had my run of television where you get a couple runs of television. I believe you get one big chunk when you're young, then you go through this dry period where you got to learn humility and watch other people that are younger than you get
and
on television.
And wonder if you should do your plan B or not.
Yeah. And then,
if you should dip into some skilled trade.
And then I believe you do a chunk like where you do stuff that you learn more than you think you're learning.
Yeah.
And then I believe you make a big, I believe this is the way I believe my career will go, and I've seen other people's. And then you do something tentpole like Louis or Bill.
You get that thing because of all that accumulated experience.
Well, you figure out what the fuck you're doing. Like, yeah. I've really focused on creating my own content, not just with the vlog, but or with the podcast, but I do a vlog also.
You do?
I do a vlog, yeah.
I got to check this out.
I'll put you in it when we get done. I'll put you in it. This will be in it.
Sweet.
But, I just edit it myself. I post it myself. And but I learned a lot about editing. I got Tom Segura, who's one of my best friends.
I suck at that stuff. It's a different type of brain that can like.
It's not. It's not. And I'm going to force you to do a vlog. because
you're going to force me to do a vlog.
I will obsess about it when we get done this. I will sit you down and I will tell you what I told Tom.
Okay.
And I'll show you what I'm seeing. And I'll show you the interaction you get between your fans.
Really?
So, yeah, a lot of people right now. A lot of people are like, they'll have notes on this podcast, and I love the people that listen to this podcast. But and they know this, and we know this. We've all talked about this via Twitter. But the comment section on this is Twitter. The people listen to it, and then they tweet me, "Hey Bert, you should have let Jesse May talk more." That's what they'll say.
That's going to be my comment.
I've heard that
you just tweeted that.
I've heard that you've gone scuba diving. I don't need to hear that again. I would like to hear about her. And that's the format of this.
Right.
Those same people then said, hey, by the way, let your guests talk more, and then you talk more on your vlog. I love your vlog. Keep up the good work. Yeah. I really like this. I've always wanted to see what it was like when you partied. I want to see what it's like when you go and hang out with Rogan. I want to see what it's like when Joey Diaz comes over.
Do you vlog with them? Do you put them on the vlog?
I just take my camera with me fucking everywhere. I take it everywhere. So I,
and so is it just like you're just like selfie sticking, videotaping yourself?
I'll show you.
And you just bring, is it almost like periscoping, but you just tape it?
I have.
That's when you know you're old, when shit starts getting creaky.
My fucking neck. I'm going to get it. So this is my camera. It's a Canon G7X.
Oh, wow. That looks good.
It's a really great camera. It's the battery's dead. But I have two batteries. I keep one on charge at all times.
Yeah.
I get like a 64 gigabyte card in here, so I don't have to change it for like a couple days.
Right.
And then my buddy John Manns, who was in that one of the dreams I had last night.
Your dreams were wild last
night. I got stuck in. I'm not going to tell you the dream. It's a stupid dream. And so, but he makes these Dinkum systems. If you guys want them, go to Dinkum.com. And Dinkumsystem.com, just type in Dinkum. And
Dinkum.
Then I screw it in. It's what I'm using to hold that,
Yeah, those are
and
dope.
I kind of just carry my camera around. And I just, like, not for everything. Because that's one of the really great things about a vlog is you start learning what to shoot and what not to shoot.
Yeah, I was just going
to
say, like, how do you cut stuff? Do you edit when you're done?
I edit the whole thing myself. But you start editing out, like, I learn what is excessive, which makes you a better on-camera talent.
Yes, to cut the fat.
Cut the fat and be like, you know what? I don't need you to roll for fucking 10 hours. Because what happens in that is the same thing that happens to me. Is I get so bored looking at footage, and that's what happens to kids who are doing string outs, these young ACs who are just like or not ACs, young APs,
yeah,
who are like, just I can't watch 10 hours, and they just did nothing happened.
Yep.
And so what you've learned to do is you learn to make more use of the time when you're shooting.
It's like you're like maximizing the time. You're forcing your brain to like do something that actually is of quality instead of just like rolling and rolling and rolling.
And that's my fall.
You think pornos are like that? Like girls are just getting rammed and rammed and rammed and rammed and then they cut it all up?
Oh, yeah.
Just like finger blasted for 14 hours?
I'd like to try to edit a porn. Because I've been editing a lot. I think that would be really a challenge. I guarantee you that's why they put the music in.
Yeah.
You know, cause the
distraction?
It's a way to cut.
Oh, yeah,
and it makes it better for the eye, that bow, 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 bow,
yep.
And then
boom, nice clean
change,
cut.
Change, clean cut, bow, 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 bow,
right
anal, bow, 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 oral, bow, 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 bow,
anal
bow.
To oral?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess.
Jesus.
Ass to mouth.
Woo! My God.
So,
Merry Christmas.
But yeah, and so I'll force you to do
a
vlog.
Okay, I'll try it.
Because you can do it on your phone.
Yeah.
I've done it on my phone. There's people that I like. I'll show you, and you'll get into their stuff, and you'll go,
yeah, I want to see. I want to see some stuff, because I'm interested in that. I'm all about diversification.
What is your plan with this business? Like, how did you go in?
To not hang myself.
Right?
You know, I didn't go in wanting to be famous. I didn't go in, like, I want to be a famous person. I just, you know, I want to, you know, do the specials. I want to have the book. I want to, do my own show. And those are things like I'm starting to, you know, we're in the precipice of getting all those things underway.
How long have you been doing stand-up?
I started when I was 19. I
Holy
did improv
shit.
For 3 years. I'm 33 now.
You're 33?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't think that.
Yeah, good skin, right?
Great
Just
skin.
Kidding.
No, you have really great
so
skin.
So cute.
It's so funny that my daughter thought you were her tutor.
I know. I walk in and she's like,
fuck.
I should have played it.
Come on, Isla, let's sit down.
I should have pretended to be your daughter's tutor.
You'd lose your... That talking about not wanting to hang yourself? Fucking Isla's tutor. I'm shocked that woman doesn't come in hammered.
Really?
Yeah, Isla's got a very tough road to plow when it comes to learning.
Oh, that's... I mean, that's difficult,
Dyslexic.
Man. Yeah, that's hard. Especially as a kid.
Yeah.
Imagine just like... Nowadays, it's almost like there's this whole promoting of being an asshole to other kids. Like, children are just such assholes to each other.
You have no fucking idea.
And so just to add in some, like, learning curve, she's going to be a strong chick, though.
She should be. We'll see. I mean, I don't know.
I almost sat down and gave her a tutor.
You
with your big-ass dog.
It's interesting that people that they meet and they don't, like, they kind of just blow it off. Like, it would be cool for her to sit down with you. And, I always feel that about, like, I always want to like slow it down and go, girls, come on out to the man cave and talk to this woman who's doing something very different with her life than fucking 98% of the women that you get to run into every day, teachers and moms. And like, take a look at a woman. It's like, Jen, I love Jen Kirkman.
Yeah, she's great.
And I always want, I always want to be like, hey, can you just like give like the perspective they get is from my wife, who I love to death.
She seems wonderful.
She's pretty fucking dialed
she
in.
She seems
woman.
Like dope, like oh. like a down chick.
I'll tell you. I mean, I'll tell
so
you.
So calm.
I'll tell you a great story about her.
Is she in meds or is she that calm?
No, she's no meds. No.
Wow.
Therapies forever.
She seems like so level.
She's.
She ever snap on you and throw coffee mugs at your face?
She's got her issues. Her issues are, like her main issue is that I know it was that I drive her fucking nuts.
Well, I know that. I mean,
yeah, like I drive her fucking nuts.
Yeah.
I have a hard time self-soothing because my parents never made me sleep in my own bed.
Oh, man.
So like if I had a nightmare, I could just get in bed with my parents then fuck their marriage up.
It's all your fault.
And my sister would sleep in bed with them and like we slept until I was 10.
Oh,
like
shit.
I remember being older than 10 sleeping in bed with them. Like I remember being in bed with them older than 10.
You're doing Regents exams in the bed.
I mean, I slept with them every. I didn't realize how fucked up this is. I slept with them every day of my life until I was 10. And
that's
at
their
10,
fucking fault.
Oh yeah, it is.
Mom and dad.
They should have made me be like,
parenting.
Be like, Bert, go to your room and figure out how to soothe yourself so you don't have to drink on a plane every time you get on a plane.
Suck your thumb. Get a blankie like the rest of your friends.
But right now in therapy, I'm going through learning how to soothe because I'll have a problem.
That's a skill, man.
Oh, it turns into a lot of pouting and temper tantrum throwing.
Do you come in here in your man cave naked and put on your cowboy boots and cry?
I come into my man cave and I sit back there and I just go, motherfucker. You know what? Fuck it. I'll just have a drink. Fuck it. I don't give a fuck. I'm going to open a bottle of wine.
Do you self-loathe a lot? Are you one of those, like, I do that. I get into those, like, self-loathing corners sometimes where you're just like, I suck. I'm not funny. And nobody like. Do you ever just get into those, like, dark crevices in your brain and just sit?
If I did to other people what I do to myself in self-loathing, I would be a horrible human being. Like, no one would want me. If I just sat and talked about people the way I talk about myself to myself, people would be like, fuck Bert, man.
Yeah, he's the worst.
He is really bad to hang around. I had a really weird, we were talking about the Comedy Store, and I've talked about this probably a lot, I guess. I don't know. But I had a weird interaction doing Ari's show with one of the bouncers who was just very not cool. He was just very not cool.
What happened? Do you want to talk about it or you don't want to get into specifics?
No, I don't care. He wasn't not cool. Let me rephrase that. And because I talked to the buddy who came over to smoke a cigar yesterday. I talked to him about it. He just was doing his job. But I'm at a place in my life where my ego is so fragile and my self-esteem is so fragile that if I go to a club that I'm not, that I don't necessarily work at, and you're like,
and they don't know.
And you're just regular. He wasn't being a dick. He was just regular. He's just like, I was like, oh, I'm a comedian. I'm doing a show. So, yeah, sorry, man. I don't know who you are. And I was like, fuck. In my head, I'm like,
It brings you right back to the beginning of like stand up,
and it really is a way to shut a stand up down because now you're not a stand up. You're not.
Yeah,
I'm not. And now I'm not a guy that looks like I'm lying. But
and it
gets
don't get in your head.
Oh, did it get in my head?
Did this happen when I saw the night I saw you at the store?
Night after.
Because it happened to me the night I saw you at the store. I mean, my excuse is I don't know. I've just come to LA and. You know, there's a lot of comedians who don't know who I am, but he did this. Some guy at the store did the same thing.
Yeah, and I literally was like, "Fuck! I got to do a show. I got to do a show."
Yeah, now you got to dig yourself out of that.
By the way, he wants me to walk around to the front of the club and show my ID.
I got ID'd.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my god.
And then people look at you, and it's just this weird.
And by the way, I got to defend the guy because I can't, because he wasn't being a dick.
He was doing his job.
He was doing his job. It's why he's paid. A fucking million people show up and go, hey, I'm a comedian. It just happens that when you say it to a guy who's been doing it 16 years, who's like a national headliner and had hour specials and it's been on TV for 6 years straight.
You're like,
it levels you.
And you're like, okay, nothing means anything.
Yeah, I was like, fuck, what have I been doing for all this time if no one knows who I am? So I was like heartbroken. And I went to Ari and Ari's, and I like, because I think, I want to say Ari had to come down and, or no.
Oh God, did somebody have to come bail you?
I think someone recognized me and was like, Bert. By the way, this is how little I know about the comedy club. I don't know the difference between the OR and the main room. And I only know that the belly room's in the back. So that's why I went to the back. I didn't know you could get to the belly room through the front.
There's so many ways to get into that place.
I didn't know that you could get to the... I thought there were three separate comedy clubs.
Yeah.
And so I only went to the back, so that's where I had only walked up a stairwell back there. I didn't know where the stairwell was. I'm literally trying to figure it out. And it looked like I was trying to break in. It did look like I was trying to break in, I'm sure. But... And my buddy yesterday was like, dude, you got to fucking let that shit go. Everyone gets at it from time to time. It's part of this fucking business.
Yeah, especially it's like, part of the location.
And it's, look, I don't work the club. The guy doesn't know me because I'm not a regular there because I don't fucking work there because I have a family and I'm on the road and I have a TV show that travels. And so I got to defend the guy in that sense.
Yep.
I got to defend any of those kids that would say, I don't know who you are. What is he supposed to say?
Oh,
let me Google you real quick.
Yeah.
Like, what,
Show him your Twitter account.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be a comic.
No.
He just is working the fucking door trying to make
a paycheck.
Yeah, he's like, hey man, I don't know who you are. And you're not Harlan Williams. And that's who I know.
Yep.
You're not Dice. I know that guy.
Yep.
You're not Joe Rogan. You're not Ari. You're not guys that are here every single night.
You're no one to me.
Yeah. And prove you're someone and I'll let you in.
Yep.
And or you can just be treated like everyone else and show your ID. And it just fucked with my ego. So the next day I was like, I was destroying myself. I was literally destroying myself. And I got
in bed. Did you come back here with the chickens?
You have no idea. I was like, because now I got to do Red Man's show. And I'm like, fuck, I got to go through this thing all again tomorrow. I got to go and be like, I'm a fucking...
I got to go and show like my social media presence just to feel validated at the door of a comedy club.
And it's... But
it's a weird thing. It's a very weird thing.
And it happens... I was talking to Tripoli about it. It happens to him at the improv because he hang out at the improv a lot. And it doesn't happen to me at the improv, but it just happens that I go to the improv a lot and I've been going there a lot.
Yeah.
So they know who I am. And if... And so it's just... It just happens at clubs you don't go... Like if I went to Laugh Factory, I don't ever go to the fucking Laugh Factory. I'm not a... Nothing wrong with that place, but I just don't. That wasn't my scene when I was younger.
Yeah,
it didn't in the kind of style of comedy I did.
Yep,
and I liked the improv, and I don't know why I picked the improv, but so I went back. Had to go back the next night. I was throwing a temper tantrum for myself and my wife. This is how great my wife is. My wife came into the room, knew I was throwing a temper tantrum, and read quotes about piety, and she was like,
"Are you serious?"
She was like, "You're being pious." She was like, "You need to be playful. That's who you are." Who you are doesn't give a fuck if some guy doesn't know who you are. She's like, are you serious?
She came out with the vocabulary like that?
No, she was like, you need to go there with humility. Is your wife
the Dalai Lama?
She's just a really centered fucking person. And so she then
leveled me and it wasn't even
she
my
gave
experience.
Me the speech about how about being fucking humble? You have a beautiful house, you have a beautiful family, you don't have to worry about money, you have a great career. How about just going up to a guy who doesn't know who the fuck you are and saying, hi, my name's Bert Kreischer. I'm a stand-up comedian. I have a show tonight. And being a fucking humble, playful person. And I went, oh, good call. Maybe that's how I should have acted to this guy the other night as opposed to whatever I said. I'm sure it didn't come out as dickish as I'm making it sound now, but like, oh, I'm a comedian. I have a fucking show. Don't stop me. I'm just walking in.
I wrestled a bear.
Ego.
Well, the ego thing, I always say that all comedians are insecure narcissists because what we do is rooted in ego, equal amounts of ego and insecurity.
Yeah.
You need to have the insecurity to dig out the material and you need to have the ego to deliver it.
Yeah.
So it's a balance
and it's hard to be able to do what you're about to do. It's a fucking thing. So anyway, the next night I go back to the store and I'm like, this will be bad. And so I go up to the front door and the guy goes, I go, hi, I'm a comedian. My name's Bert Kreischer. He goes, I know who you are. I was like, oh.
Same guy?
No, different guy.
Oh.
But I was like, oh, thank God. And then he was like, just go back. I go, I don't work here very often, so I don't know where I'm going. And he's like, go back there. So I walked to the, and I have to go by another bouncer. And I'm like, hi, my name's Bert. He's like, I know who you are, man. Just go back there. So I was like, it just happened that the one guy working.
That one night.
Maybe didn't. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But I did say, I did have a great time at the store that night.
Yeah.
It was a place I'd love to work more. But the truth is, I am also not home a ton. So I can't put in the man hours.
You have to go and you have to hang and do the whole scene thing.
It's worth it.
It's hard. It is worth it.
It's a great club.
It is a great club.
Great
it feels
group
good.
Of comics that yep. hang out there. And
to get that energy, it's been around forever. But it's hard. Like when you're on the road a lot, like that's how I feel. I go in and I'm just like, I feel like I'm back at square one because.
You started doing stand up in Syracuse.
I started in Boston doing stand up there.
Oh, that's right,
in
Boston. Yeah. And then when did you move to New York? Because New York has that energy of like having to like.
Woo. New York is like, it's like dental work. That's what it feels like. It feels like every time you go out, you're just getting a molar ripped out of your face.
Where did you first start working in New York?
Just like comedy run shows, like comedian run shows. Like I just did all those, like the Village Lantern, the what was that one around the on West Third, Comedy Underground. And then I just started running my own bullshit shows and barking, getting people in. I just did
you
that
barked?
For years. Oh yeah.
I barked.
Middle of the winter.
I barked.
In the corner.
That Boston Comedy Club flyer is what I used to hand out when I barked.
Oh my, it looks like, you know, it looks like a flyer for a guy who does senior photos.
Yeah. It's, well,
that's awesome.
That was, I used to bark and hand out that flyer.
I handed out flyers too for like years.
Yeah.
And then you go and you do this, you know, you take a majority of the stage time, you bogart the stage time, and you hand it out to the rest of your friends.
It's the best.
The best.
Now, and then when did you start doing TV? Like, when did you...
The first TV I did was a Tyra Banks show, like, years ago.
You did the Tyra Banks
yes,
show?
Yes, I did. It was, like, 2008.
I barked her into the comedy club one time.
You did?
I didn't know who she was. She was just a hot chick, and I was like...
Was she tall? She's a big... I know she's tall, but, yeah. Like, she's a big-ass woman.
She's big, and I barked her in before the club was open. Like, meaning, like, I barked her in at, like, 7:30. There, no one, we hadn't sat anyone. So she came into the club to get seats and didn't
you
see
didn't
anyone.
You didn't know who she was?
Didn't know who she was.
Wow.
Just a beautiful black
she
woman.
She is beautiful. Yeah, I did her show. It was this thing called, a segment called Guest on the Side, and they were trying to, like, increase the ratings. And so they were trying to find a comedian to be, like, the, you know, the bounce off, like, the clown of the show, basically. And they didn't give me any format. You know, there was, one thing I had to do as far as, like, a technicality, like, just holding up cards and doing some sort of specific thing. Other than that, they were, like, just sort of, like, feed off of her, keep it clean, you know, just kind of pop up what she says. And I was like, all right, cool. So I didn't want to step on her toes or anything. When she addressed me, I said some stuff, and I had, like, a chair in the middle of the audience. And it went great. You know, it was my first gig. I was so proud that I was able to not swear and not go salacious and say, you know, butthole jokes or whatever.
Yeah.
And it went great. I was like, oh, this is awesome. And so they had me back one more time, and it went great again. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. This is how TV is. And then she didn't want me back. She didn't want me back. I don't know why. And then the show got canceled.
Yeah.
And
well, it's so funny because it's in that moment, it's so about you.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, why the fuck? What does she hate about me?
And then you go, what did I do wrong? And then you start like recycling. You go over all the things you said. And you're like, well, maybe I shouldn't have said this. And then it comes down to just whatever the way the breeze was blowing that day.
Oh, it comes down to the fact that she probably wasn't thinking about you at all.
Yeah.
Her show's about to get canceled, and she's trying to keep her head above water.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, Tyra thought about Tyra a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the craziest thing.
It was Tyra Day.
Yeah.
But then, so something funny happened recently that made me think about that. So I had to do a Skype, I had a Skype with a couple network executives and a couple producers for a new show. I forget what network it was, some daytime show, that they wanted to meet me and consider me for being on the panel. And this was like 4 or 5 months ago. And so I'm Skyping with these two girls, and we're having a great time, and they're asking about all my experiences and, you know, what I want to do and my TV experiences. And I told them about the Tyra Banks show. And now, keep in mind, I didn't know what this was for. And this was just, this is why I can't wake up in the morning and not have a cup of coffee. I need to think about what's going on in the day before I am expected to talk, because it's unfiltered.
Yes.
If I don't look at a schedule book or know who I'm meeting, I'm just not going to book whatever.
Yeah.
So I tell them the story that I just told you, and I also added the fact that I didn't think Tyra was a good host.
Oh.
I was like, you know, it was a little bit difficult of a job because she kind of dropped the ball a few times, and I had to try and, you know, it was my first experience, so it was, like, difficult. So it turns out the show that I'm Skyping with these women about is a new Tyra Banks show, and I had just told them how shitty I thought she was.
Holy shit.
Isn't that crazy? And
that
so
is...
That Skype was like a few months ago. So fast forward to Wednesday or Thursday night, I did Laugh Factory and then I did the improv. And I'm in the bathroom, and there's these two girls in there, and I come out, and the one girl's like, oh, I'm so excited to see you. I'm here to see you. And I look at her. I'm like, you look kind of familiar. She's like, yeah, I Skyped with you on the phone about that show. And I'm like, oh my God.
God.
I was like, can I just clear myself? Like, I didn't mean to be a bitch about Tyra. I think she's great and talented. I just was like, it was morning. I didn't have my green tea yet.
Yeah.
And I just was like totally off the cuff, unfiltered. She's like, no, it's fine. It's fine. I mean, I didn't book the gig for whatever reason, but it was funny. Like, those moments come back and you're like, you gotta shut your fucking mouth once in a while.
Now, where do you find yourself getting not pigeonholed, but typecast in this business?
You know, I guess it's the funny and pretty thing kind of drives me nuts.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind, like, I don't play up my prettiness and I don't play it down. I don't think about it as much. So I guess, like, just the whole having to categorize it specifically kind of just drives me a little nuts.
Yeah.
But in the same breath, it's like, you know, you got to know where your strengths are and you have to realize that the business is labeled for a reason because people need labels to digest stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess I just, that maybe is the only thing that I've been typecasted as, but I'm just trying to be funny. That's it.
Yeah.
I just want to be funny. I don't want to try and do something to fit into some sort of slot.
That's the weird thing is I feel like they set up slots.
They do. They're preemptive slots and they want you to fit in so that they can consume you the way that they want to consume you. And I think that's for me, I guess where I'm at is like people don't really, the industry knows who I am, but I'm still at that, the precipice of doing things. So I guess it's an advantage because I haven't yet done that big show that I'm starring in and I haven't yet, you know, released a book that I've been writing. So all these things are new.
Do you want to write a book?
Yeah, I started like 2 years ago.
It's a fucking nightmare.
It's a nightmare because people don't realize how many drafts you have to do. You start and you get it done and you're like, this is fucking amazing.
Someone equated it to, maybe a David Spade said it's like, I'm only saying that because I have his book.
Yeah, so like, right next to yours, right here on the coffee table.
To like giving birth or having a baby or having a child. If that's what it's like to give birth, I don't want to do it again.
You don't want to do it again, yeah. And it's just, it's been a long process and you leave it because you get busy with other stuff. I'm on the road a lot and the podcast.
You're doing the road a lot right now.
Yeah.
Like I see you in every club I'm about to go to.
Yeah, I'm always like, you know, I look at the guys that I know and I'm like, oh, I love Bert. There's always like a few people I'm like, these are the best.
Yeah, my people that I always saw were like Bobby Lee. There's a guy,
fucking funny.
Bobby Lee is the sweetest guy. Ugh. I love that guy.
Don't you look at him and just, you think he's a toddler? Every time I see him, he feels like a toddler to me.
He is pure. When my wife said playfulness,
yes,
playfulness over piety, that is Bobby Lee.
Yeah,
there's not a pious part of him. He is just a fun, giggling, and I'm like, I want to be more like that. Like, who the fuck doesn't like Bobby Lee? Like Ari beat him up one time, but
oh yeah, yeah.
But I used to see Bobby Lee. There was a guy named Jay Medicine Hat. Do you know who that is?
Oh, it sounds like a drug dealer. That's an interesting name.
He passed away. He had a stroke.
Oh,
he
was, I'm sorry.
He did
R.I.P.
A lot. No.
Did he do a lot of drugs?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm not talking ill of the dead. I think anyone R.I.P. that knew him.
I'll talk ill of the dead. I'll bring it on.
He was a guy I always was about to come into. There's a guy I'd really like to have on my podcast.
Who is it?
The Raging Cajun, John.
Yeah.
John.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he's in every
Raging
funny
Cajun.
Bone.
Come on, what's his last name?
John. Oh fuck! But he's destructive. I mean, every club he goes to, he's like the staff's favorite comic. He destroys every fucking show. Yeah. And the really fascinating thing about him, his wife won the lottery.
What?
His wife won the lottery, so he doesn't need to work.
How, like a jackpot?
Like fucking
millions?
30 million or 116 million? Like won the lottery.
That's insane.
John Witherspoon. I got to type.
I know you got to Google it because I'm gonna go home and be like, "What was it?" And just not realize I can Google it. The Raging Cajun sounds like a good. I mean, it sounds like a hot sauce brand. Or what I call my vagina after a bad, you know, weekend.
The Raging Cajun. Oh, I went out with a Raging Cajun last night. Fuck. Shit. Do you have a boyfriend?
I'm kind of seeing a fella.
How's that work?
It's been working well because he can travel a lot, so he's been traveling to my weekends with me.
John Morgan.
Okay. See, I wouldn't have thought of Morgan.
John Morgan, the Raging Cajun. Yep. If anyone wants to hit up John Morgan.
Hit him up. Get some hot sauce. Yeah, it's weird having a significant other. We haven't said the boyfriend-girlfriend thing because I feel like once you start
labeling things,
then it just sort of starts to deplete. Maybe that's just because I'm jaded. I come from a broken home, but...
That's what I said to my wife. The second you start naming things, it makes it complicated. You know what my wife said?
What?
Then I'm done with you. I was like 29 years old.
Wow.
And I was like, what?
I love your wife.
She was like, I'm a serious person. I know that I love you. And if you cannot say I love you back to me and commit to me, then what am I doing? I'm wasting my fucking time.
Yeah.
And I went, hold on. And she's like, no, I'm done. And dumped
me. We're so jaded. We're so jaded. Yes. Because we come from these, like, you know, you were sleeping with your parents until you were like 17. My mom moved in the neighbor when I was 9. My neighbor's dad, she moved in when I was 9.
What do you mean?
Well, my parents were together. Yeah. And then my dad, you know, left. And then the father who lived 2 doors down, the father of the family that I grew up with, moved in.
And like,
was like my stepdad after that. I was like, why is Steve here?
Dating your mom?
Yeah. I was like, why is Steve here? And why are his kids still over there? Like, what's happening?
Wait, was your mom, why did your parents get split up?
You know, I just think arguing, whatever the accumulation of personalities, incompatible.
Yeah, that's right.
Is it on or in? I never know. Incompatible?
Is incapacitated.
Incapacitated. Not compatible.
Yeah.
I think they were just arguing a lot. And then, you know, they decided to.
Are you an only child?
No, I had a sister. I was 4 years older. Yeah. But she was, you know, she was older when this happened. She kind of understood. So I think that, you know, but like the point is you just have these experiences that sort of make you see how bad it can be. And then that becomes the best it could be. You know what I'm saying?
Like, no, say it again. What do you mean?
Like you grow up in a certain environment and you see the worst of it. And in your mind, that's as good as it gets. And so you sort of keep that as a standard for your relationships.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking for myself. You just sort of follow. You stay in that lane of dating guys who you don't really value or they don't value you. And you just sort of recycle this thing that you've experienced in your life until you realize, oh, that's not healthy.
Yeah.
That's not the way to do it.
Yeah.
Everyone deserves more. You don't have to, you know, repeat history.
That's exactly. I found crazy women my whole life. I found women that needed something.
Yeah, you're attracted to that, right?
And I was attracted to that. And it was like, I wanted someone with volatile. Like, I look back. It's so interesting. I look back at the relationships I had. Not only, I was never abusive, but I was definitely not a healthy boyfriend to anybody.
Right, like emotionally reckless?
I was just like, I get my feelings hurt really easily, yeah. And I throw temper tantrums, and like...
I was the same way.
Like, I'm very grateful that there wasn't an internet back then that people could have posted stories about what a bad boyfriend I was.
Right.
Like, I mean, I was the kind of boyfriend that, like, their friends were like, you need to break up with this guy. He's not healthy for you. Like, and I just was like, I treated people poorly. I was very self-centered.
How'd you get out of that? Did you take therapy? Get into therapy?
I my last girlfriend that probably last girlfriend, like not legit last girlfriend, but like before my wife, the last one I said that I loved.
Yeah.
Was this girl, Kristen, who was the reason I got into stand-up. And she was just very supportive. She was really... I mean, she was just like the kind of person that was like that you needed in your life at that moment.
It's
I was
a
horrible
thing.
Boyfriend to her. Like, I was not a good boyfriend.
Right.
Man, not that I was like, I never hit her. I never like, I never was demeaning to her.
Right.
At all. I was just
emotional issues.
I liked to fight, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so I'd pick fights. I don't know. It's not just not, yeah, I was emotionally a bad person.
Yeah.
And I would, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but like,
no, I get it. It's hard. It's like a you.
I've never laid my hands on a woman, but I definitely have acted like the people that do. Meaning, like, I've been like, "What the fuck?" You know,
yeah.
Like, I just never like, which I think is like emotional abuse.
It is emotional abuse, and it's just a not knowing how to communicate and not knowing how to connect
and not being comfortable with my feelings. I've been cheated on by a girl, and so I never trusted anybody.
Yep, and then that becomes, and that's what I'm saying. Like, when something happens and you experience, then you're sort of in this lane of repeating it and going after it.
Yeah,
and then you're just fighting it, but wanting it, and fighting
and you're
it,
bringing
and
it in, and you're like, and you want that fucking thing because that's what you know is safety. And I remember at the end of the relationship, I remember her being like, I was living in New York. She was the whole reason that I mean, like, not the whole reason, but she was a vast majority of the reason that I got into stand-up, because I'd said about it in this Rolling Stone article, and everyone got me to do it. She supported me. She supported me moving to New York. She was a flight attendant. Wow. She would come up to New York, and she would tell me I'm the funniest person she's ever seen, that I'm funnier than everyone else. But then after a while, it was like a long-distance relationship, and it wasn't healthy. Like, we would just get on the phone and fight. And I'm sure I was picking the fights because I didn't know what she was doing and I didn't trust her. And then we broke up, and I thought, and she was, I remember her one time saying, like, are you happy? Because I'm not happy and you don't seem happy.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'm not that fucking happy. Like, in all honesty, I was able to say in all honesty, yeah, I'm definitely not happy. Like,
was it the first time that you actually addressed that emotion and realizing, there it is.
Yeah, I am not enjoying myself.
Did you have an Oprah aha moment?
Yeah.
An emotional Oprah aha moment?
Yeah. And I said, I want to get rid of this jealousy, and I want to get rid of all these things of not trusting women.
How did you do that? So do you getting into stand-up was therapy for you in a sense? For me, it took therapy getting out of that emotional, that repetitive, unhealthy, ruthless, reckless sort of repetition. I use therapy. You didn't?
I said I'm not going to let myself date anyone until I can figure out how to operate in this with another person. Yeah.
That's exactly what I said to myself too. Like, I've been single. This is the first guy I've dated since my last volatile relationship, who was with a comedian, who was,
do I know him?
Giannis Pappas.
Okay.
We dated. We lived together. We were together for almost 3 years. It was difficult. So after that relationship, I was like, I got to figure out what my issues are before I'm able to even allow somebody into my life.
Yeah.
That's a big step. And that's a big thing to realize as a human being, that I got to figure my shit out. Because then if you don't do that, you just repeat these horrible patterns.
I remember thinking, I was like, that girl Kristen was really cool. She was really cool. And I kind of fucked it up because I didn't trust her and I didn't trust anybody. And I would just allow little bullshit to not make things fun.
Right.
I was like, and I'm not that I wanted to be with her, but I was like, the next person that comes by, I better be ready. Like, I better be ready emotionally. So I was like, I'm not dating anybody until I figure this out. And I was like, wouldn't date anybody. And I would hook up, and which made me feel very uncomfortable, very insecure.
Right, because are you a person who kind of likes an emotional connection as well? Yeah, it's hard to just bang.
First one night stand, I think I said I love you to the person.
I've never had a one night stand. I can't do that.
Freaks
me out.
Two. I've only been with six women.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're like Amish.
Yes, I am. How old were you when you lost your virginity?
Well, the first time I lost my virginity was an unwanted experience. Yeah, I was raped by a boyfriend. Is that too heavy to say?
No.
I mean, I talk about it. I have, you know, it's material that I'm trying to get into.
How old were you?
16. That was my first sexual experience.
And I dated someone at one point that had that experience too.
Yeah, and it's a weird thing because, you know, everyone, their buttholes pucker up when you say rape, first of all.
Yeah.
It's a
weird word because it's so loaded with so many things, but it's like, it's almost like saying, it's almost like the word pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, once it happens, there's no other thing than that to call it.
That's all it is.
You can't call it anything lighter than that. It's that.
Right. And it has different stages, just like pregnancy. There are different things that can happen under that word. And one of the ones that makes people feel like, oh, well, that's not real rape, is when it's with somebody you know. And it was with a guy that I was dating, but I wasn't ready. I wanted to wait. You know, I was one of these girls. I was like, I'm going to wait. I'm not ready for sex. And he didn't honor that. And that was my first sexual experience. So that kind of set me off as well. Like having, you know, like, oh, okay, this is the way it's supposed to be.
So wait, was it just that one time or did he do it a couple times?
It was that one time. And then I didn't tell anybody. I went and got the Plan B pill because I thought I was going to get pregnant. And so I was sick for like 3 days after that.
God,
I didn't tell my mom.
Heavy.
It was heavy, yeah. And, you know,
you're not emotionally ready to handle all this stuff.
No, I was 16 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing was that, like, I stayed with him for a couple weeks after that because I just was so confused. I was like, this is somebody I trust. What's happening?
How long had you been dating before that?
I was 16, but, you know, when you're 16, it's like puppy love.
Yeah.
But he was older. He was 18 years old. And then he choked me, pushed me up against the wall, grabbed me by my neck, and choked me against the wall over, I don't care what it was. I mean, you never, obviously, that's horrible. And then I was, in my mind, I'm like, this is terrible.
No, I don't care what it was. if you had stole 10 grand from him, I get it.
Yeah, like, I mean, if I had like killed his dog, maybe. There's reasons to chokehold somebody.
Like, I can figure out a few reasons.
I think I changed the channel. The reason was so much, like, so minuscule. You're right. I should take that back. There are reasons to choke out a bitch.
There's definitely a few times where you're like, what?
I'm going to choke a motherfucker.
No, no, no. She fucking sold him out to the mob. Like,
that's when you choke somebody.
He's going to be killed. Like, okay. He's going to be killed in a week. No, yeah, I've been joking, obviously.
Oh,
but,
my God, that's
but it's
so funny.
You go, I don't know what the reason was. I'm sure it was, and all I thought was, I was trying to think of what
Why
would be the
what
reason.
What would validate it?
What would validate it?
Whatever. So it wasn't a validated chokehold. And then after the day, I was like, that's it. This is unhealthy. And then I just kept it a secret for a long time. You know, I told my sister and my mom about it 2-3 years ago for the
really?
First time. Yeah, even though I had gotten into it in my comedy and tried to like...
And so you only had sex with him that one time?
Yeah.
Fuck. And did you see him again? Was he in your school?
No, he was out of school. He was a bouncer at my cousin's club. This is like real upstate, small town shit, you know? And it's very... I think it's common for people who come from homes that have been shaken up a bit. Yeah, he was just some dude. He was just a bouncer at a club, like just trashy stuff, you know. And I was looking for that, you know, looking for affection in any corner that I could find it, and sort of thinking being attracted to somebody is obviously not good for me.
Yeah,
you know, there's nothing about that person that would be a suitable mate for a 16-year-old. But that's probably why I was attracted to it, because I'm looking for something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the first time I had sex. Yeah, it's heavy.
I don't have, not that if I did, I'd share this, but like, I don't have any part of rape mentality in my heart.
Yeah.
Only because I'm very embarrassed of my body. I'm very embarrassed of how I'll perform sexually. I'm literally, I don't know, like,
stop.
The confidence rapists must have
to
be able to be like, no, I know you want it. Like, yeah. I literally have, I've had women think I was gay because literally if they said no at all, I was like, okay, never mind. And they're like, whoa, hold on. No doesn't mean no.
Yeah, some girls know, like they say, they play with the no.
Yeah.
Because they want to have like that little thing.
I was
thing.
Like, fuck you.
Which
if
is
you
smart.
Mean no. Like, I've definitely had awkward situations. Like, I had a weird threesome one time where everyone was like, oh, fuck.
But I don't like, even, I can't even, I've never had a threesome. Like, I feel like it's how do you juggle
well,
all that?
Mine was with two other guys, so it was just all,
okay, so it was just like
three guys. Okay.
Was it in the man cave? Am I sitting in a wet spot?
No, it was,
there's a lot of wine glasses in here.
It was, I don't even know if it constitutes, no one had sex, but it doesn't constitute technically as a threesome.
Was it really two guys?
No. It was
I was
two,
just like a jerk circle. I don't
girls.
Know if you guys were like in stockings jerking
yourself.
I don't
think my wife even knows about that.
Maybe we should cut that part out.
No, we'll leave it in.
Dave Coulier, but, cut it out.
But yeah, the... that is so fucking
I'm
funny.
I'm so glad that you caught that.
Of course. So when was the next time you had sex?
I think probably like within 6 months after that with just some boy that I didn't really know.
Really?
Yeah,
was it almost to like right your boat?
Yeah, and also just trying to find, you know... the balance. I was so young, and that was my introduction into that world. I was just like, I don't know how to navigate this. What's my vagina for? That's a very important thing for parents to teach their kids, what your vagina is for and how to allow people into it, because it's a powerful thing. I think it's undervalued. You know, you gotta put pussy strength in your daughters. Not you personally, but just people in general, and you as well.
Yeah, It's a very powerful thing. It
it's
runs
powerful,
this house.
Powerful thing. Your house, and you got chickens. You are outnumbered by puss.
Oh, if my wife,
I don't mean to say puss and your daughters. I feel like in the sentence it's a
doesn't
being well, insensitive.
No,
I mean it in the nicest, respectful way.
It's interesting. It's interesting. When you have that as your first experience, is there a connection to that ever? Does that ever come up?
Oh yeah, for
really?
Years.
Really?
That's all. That was the core of it for years. It was, you know, it was really hard to find that balance and realize that I should be also pleased during sex. I didn't know that for years. I didn't know that that was a part of sex. So it became this bad pattern of just not having a healthy sexual life. And that makes it difficult in relationships. So that was also an additive, like a little ingredient in the emotional issues that I already had from coming from a broken home that just sort of made me not ready to be in relationships and me dating people who obviously represented this idea that I felt about myself. So, you know, it just becomes a pattern of dating these people who don't deserve you and you know, vice versa, and just sort of using each other, using this sort of mentality that people are disposable. So it took a while to realize the pattern and realize the self-worth.
So interesting. You seem like the girl in college that I would have been afraid to talk to. Like you're just really...
Why?
Well, you're really pretty, you're confident, you're funny. I would have been like, oh, she's meant for like the guy whose dad owns half
all
of
the
West Virginia.
Or
the dad who's... the boy whose dad owns Browning Gun Company. And he only
all the
dates,
corner stores.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Right. His name's on every shop.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, but it's so funny in talking to you about it. You're like, oh, I just went for the bouncer, the 18-year-old loser bouncer. And you're like, it's so funny. I never saw that loser bouncer. I saw him as the stud because he got girls like you. And I was always like, I always dated really great girls. But I was, it's interesting that you see it that way. Now, how old were you the first time you had an orgasm?
Oh, that's a good question.
I want to ask my wife too.
That's a good question.
I wonder if my wife will answer that question.
I'm going to say it was years after I first had sex. Years.
Really?
And when it happened, I was alone. I figured it out on my own.
Oh, you figured it out?
Yeah, and I was like, what?
I was like, was it a ghost?
Yeah, it was. What do they call that? When girls think they've been boned by
a ghost?
Like Fanta. Something.
I've definitely had those.
Yeah. Will you get fucked by ghosts?
I've been fucked by a ghost. I've been fucked by a ghost.
Have you been like in the butthole?
No.
How do you get fucked? Like where?
No. They got on top of me.
Really?
Oh yeah. But
stop it!
I swear to God. But
Bert, you just went. Your craziness just went off the charts.
I swear to God. But I think it was. I really think it was a nocturnal emission, and that was
and
part of the
dreaming?
Dream. It was a dream.
Yeah.
But like, I definitely thought. Like,
nocturnal emission sounds like something that happens to your car at night. Doesn't it? It doesn't sound like a body related thing. It sounds like your car's leaking in the park in the driveway.
Dream. A wet dream.
Nocturnal emission.
That's why. Yeah. Like,
call
wet
Ford.
Dream, wet dream sounds so. Wet dream sounds so much more what it is.
Can I turn that into a joke? Is
please,
that funny?
Please, yeah.
Okay, that's
the
funny.
Other thing you got to turn into a joke is, and I was already thinking of this, and I was like, I don't know if you talk about getting choked by a boyfriend. There's no reason to choke a girl and go, actually, I can find a couple.
Yeah,
if I had flushed all his coke and his gun down the toilet.
Oh, that's such a good angle. I've had a hard time like trying to, because people pucker up when I talk about rape. They pucker up when I talk about abuse. They pucker up. And so it's like, it's a hard subject to get into.
What's fascinating, and this is, I don't talk about rape only because I had one joke about it and Matt Fultron told me, he's like, yeah. He's like, it's a great joke, gets a good laugh, and it's good that you can go dark like that, but he's like, are you really that guy? And I was like, what? And he's like, I mean, think about it. Like, everyone came to have a really great time, and like, you just brought up the worst day in someone's life. Like, someone sat in the crowd and was like, oh, that's right, I got raped. That fucking show sucks now. And I was like,
that's
interesting. It's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, it's
I was
an interesting
like,
way to look how the audience would connect to it and the energy
and
they'd
why
feel.
They'd come to see me. No one's coming to see me to see me go like dark.
Right.
They want to see me take chances, but no one wants to be reminded of that.
Right.
For me, that's for my show.
Right.
For if you go to Tosh and you don't expect to hear stuff that's going to
dark.
If you have a dude in your family that's paraplegic, a blind guy, a special needs guy, and your sister got raped,
and you're looking for like physical humor about puppies.
Yeah, that's the wrong show to go to.
Yep.
But what I find fascinating in that story you told from a comics perspective, and I would never suggest that I'd know how to tell a rape joke.
No, I mean, I'm all ears.
But I find it interesting that he raped you and you still dated him, but he choked you and you said that's enough. and that you said there's never a reason to choke someone, but clearly, like you
there's
had
always
justified,
a reason to rape someone.
You justified a reason to be raped. Like you're like in your head, you're
that's
like
interesting.
He didn't mean it like that.
Right.
Or whatever you thought, I'd
well,
be interested to hear.
I'm gonna give him another shot.
I'll give him another shot.
Yeah.
Maybe it was me.
Maybe
like,
it was just he had an off day.
But then he choked you, and you're like,
that's enough.
Yeah. But like, I would. It's so funny to find.
That is funny because.
You said there's never a reason to choke someone. I could think of 10 off the top of my head. Yep. Why choking someone, like grabbing someone and choking them?
Touching your kid. Somebody hit your kid.
Oh,
somebody
fuck,
took a shit in your doorstep. Somebody punched your window.
Yeah.
Somebody stole something out of your man cave.
I go even darker. Like, dude, you fucking lit my cat on fire.
You lit my cat on fire, you son of a bitch.
Well, what the fuck were you?
Yeah.
But like, I can actually never think of a reason to rape someone.
Right.
Except the Louis C.K. joke. You ever hear that? There's no reason ever to rape someone. Unless, of course, you want to have sex with them and they don't want you to
have sex with them. Yeah.
Yeah, you totally have to rape them.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
That's total Louis.
I'd have to be careful of the parallel there. If someone took your chicken, would you choke them? Took one. You have three? If someone took one, is that chokeable?
No.
What if they took all three?
We almost thought we lost one the other day and I got really panicked. And if someone had, I had seen someone with my chicken, I just would have, I'm very non-confrontational. I think that leads back to me never, I can never imagine hitting a woman.
Yeah. Cause
I just, that's not.
It's a chemical thing.
It's hard for me to hit a guy. Why would I hit a woman? If I'm going to be a guy that hits, I'd hit men first because that's more
Test
acceptable.
It out.
Yeah, well, it's just like your rage builds.
Yeah.
And that's where no one's going to. But I never could really hit a guy.
Yeah, it's definitely a certain chemical that already exists in your DNA, I think, that makes you the type of person that can commit those acts.
You're an atrocious person.
Yeah, you're an atrocious person. You have deep-rooted issues that probably will never be cured.
Yeah, anytime I see someone, a guy who's violent with other men, I go, that trickles over.
Yeah, it sure does.
You can't. I'm not saying like MMA fighters who do it for a living. I'm not saying
that's a sport. That's different.
That's a sport. But I'm saying like
guys that
are at a bar, they're like, fuck that guy. And they punch him.
Just like ruthless.
I'm like, wow, that whatever part of that personality is.
Yeah. And it's a scary thing because it's predatory and it's rooted in a really animalistic urge that I feel the more cognitive part of your brain can't control.
Yeah. I also used to say that guys like the whole rape culture joke thing.
Yeah.
They're like, well, guys who. I forget how it went, but the one thing I said, the one thing you can be certain is that any guy who makes a rape joke would never rape anybody.
Right.
A guy who doesn't make rape jokes, probably that's who you need to work out. Cause I remember when I made that joke and Fultron saw it, I was like, yeah, but I would never do that. That's why I'd make the joke.
And was that his point?
And Matt's like, well, I don't know, but you're bringing up like a horrible time in someone's life. I always think the guys that make them are like Daniel Tosh would never fucking rape anybody.
No, no.
Never in a million fucking years. And I don't think that, I don't know, I don't think the jokes correlate to the action.
No, they don't. I think it's about experience and like what experiences.